Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, doing a little rundown of some of the tiers. And I've gone back through, I added in the rookies, I went back and redid some comments on some older comments that needed to be redone on the veterans. So I'm sort of thinking bigger picture right now. I do think there's some opportunities in the market right now. So I'll sort of walk through the quarterback tiers. And I do think at this point that there is the late round super flex startup draft can be implemented. Now, this early in the off season was a question to me about whether or not that was a good idea, because this is something I've sort of found in the data that the difference between, you know, typically it looks like the third to about the seventh round and super flex startup drafts, it's generally pretty flat in terms of warp and those sorts of things. This year it's a little bit jacked because, right, that third round is, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, maybe at the position. Now that's like 14. Right? You're getting 7, 8, 9 guys going up in the top, you know, 10, 11, 12 picks. So it's a much different atmosphere. However, I think if you sort of, instead of thinking about it in startup rounds, you think about it in terms of startup players, right? In terms of the actual, you know, it's quarterback 10, right? And if quarterback 10 is going in the first round versus quarterback 10 going in the third round, you sort of still look at that arc and have a good idea about it. So one of the things I've found, and I've talked about this in a couple other pods, that basically if you get the option to take a quarterback who has a hit versus one that doesn't, and you're looking at the top 12 of the position, you take the guy that's got the hit pretty clearly. And so that's one of the things, like Russell Wilson seems to make a ton of sense. He's going at 202 in some of the recent drafts that we're tracking. That's quarterback 9. I mean, that's going behind Lawrence, behind Burrow. I mean, it's going behind Herbert. And historically, you take that over Herbert. You take that profile instead of Herbert's profile, pretty clearly. So that's really the angle that I would have on it. Is I think that there's now more of an opportunity to wait. So how would we do that? Well, I do think up at the top, like if you're at the top of the board and it's Mahomes, I think it's tough to pass, right? If you have a look at Dak, I think it's tough to pass. But after that, you know, Josh Allen, I'd probably, you know, I think you'd probably stick and pick. But I do think some of the guys after that have some concerns. Lamar, what's he going to do as a passer? Kyler Murray, right? We have some of those questions too. You know, with Herbert and Burrow, there's those questions about longevity. So all of those things, right? I can sort of say, hey, listen, you know, that's probably the spot that we would pivot. I'm not sure I'd pivot off of a Supermax guy. And that being said, you know, I've got in the 5-year window, I've got Mahomes, I've got Dak, I've got Russell Wilson. I actually have Deshaun Watson there right now because I don't know where else to put him. But he does seem like a 5-year window guy, assuming that window opens, right? And assuming that he's not suspended or anything like that. And I'm assuming that he's not going to be. So that he's not going to be long-term, right? Maybe he gets suspended for a year. I think that's kind of like the max that we lose from him. And 4 out of 5 years ain't bad. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it. So I have him up there. So it's a couple round difference between him and Russell Wilson, for example. You know, it's basically a 2.5 round difference between him and Prescott. So that's really the angle with him. I think he sort of fits that category, and because of the risk, he's probably a buy, right, where he's going. Now I've seen him, it's 311. I've seen him fall a little bit further than that. In some drafts, he might be in the midst of a little bit of a fall. I don't think so. I think he's sort of hanging around that, between that late, mid to late third round, right into that early fourth round. If he's going to fall any further than that, like we're got to smash that. There's just too much upside there. So that's one of the angles on him, right? I mean, and I think any quarterback strategy needs to sort of start with what you think about Watson. I think the other thing you need to think about is what you think about Rodgers. That's kind of where I would go with any of these, because they could be a viable quarterback. One, you know, late third round, 310, 311. That's where they're going, respectively, Rodgers and Watson. So if that's kind of what you're thinking, you know, you got to figure out how comfortable you are with that. They have different risk profiles. They have different, risks associated with them. Rodgers on the older end, he'll be playing 38. Watson's got the suspension, arrest, civil lawsuit risks, all those things. So they're different risks. Obviously, Rodgers threatening. I don't think he's actually going to post Jeopardy and hold out, but I guess that is a tail risk there. Outside of that, so I do think you can go later than that, right? So you can, like, if you pass on, if you've got like a later first, you know, maybe you go something like McCaffrey first round, you know, Barkley or something like that. You've got some of these guys, like, you go early at the position, maybe you run it back with a tight end, something like that. You're going non-quarterback, sort of. What's the pivot? Well, I think the pivot makes a lot of sense in the two-year window. So I got the two-year window of comfort. And there's basically, in that range, there's Allen, Murray, Jackson. Again, they haven't signed Supermax deals yet. If they do, they'll probably be adjusted upwards. I still don't know how great I'll feel about Lamar Jackson's passing, but I think at that point you have to probably adjust to it. You know, and that's going after Herbert and Burrow. That's kind of a tier there. Again, not having Lawrence in there either. I would rather wait and pay up for a quarterback than pay a third round startup pick for a rookie. That's kind of my take on it. Just because there's so much of a whiff rate, there's so much risk involved with those guys. Give me the guy that's done it, especially if they're coming at a discount of a guy that hasn't done it. But at cost, I take the guy that's done it. It's typically the way that I see it, especially if I'm trying to sort of be competitive and not just, you know, plan like a four-year build type deal. I don't want to build forever, but I don't want my competitive zone to start forever from now either. So that's the deal. I mean, I do like Fields and Lance and those guys, but I think you're kind of more looking, if you're trying to do the young quarterback route, like, you're getting a four-round discount on Mac Jones, getting a two-round discount on Zach Wilson. We know that those guys largely are random. Mac Jones probably less or so, because he's probably just outside the comfort zone. We feel comfortable comping him to like a second overall pick. But I mean, you're getting a gap there between Zach Wilson and the other guys. And I think Zach Wilson's going 18, Fields and Lance are going 11 and 12. That's a two-round gap. You know, so I do think when you look at those, sort of, that's the stuff that I'm looking to kind of hit in terms of it being, in terms of putting a board together and battling it. So if I were to go the young route, probably going to pass on Fields and Lance in a startup draft, and then hit some more of these other guys. So I think if you want to go and put together a board and say, hey, listen, I'm going to do the punt quarterback. I'm going to punt quarterback at Superflex. What does that look like? I think it's pretty clear what it looks like to me. I think there's a couple of things you need to do. The Stafford, Tannehill, Ryan, Cousins, Goff range of the position. And so that's, to give you an idea, that's Stafford's 410, Ryan Tannehill's 501, Matt Ryan's 611, Kirk Cousins 710, Jared Goff 812. I think that is a hit two, if not three, type range. Top five MVP odds for Matthew Stafford, that does not seem in any way baked into his cost in Dynasty. I almost fell over when I was reading some of that stuff the other day. So it seems like, to me, and again, he's 33. When you sort of look at the guys in the top 12 of the position, historically, that's about the age they've been, that have had multiple hits, and they crush guys that haven't produced. So he's a little bit off that pace in terms of 15.5. And I'll be doing some more of that research, you know, extending it out a little bit, trying to look at some different markers for that. But I think the general premise is going to hold. Right, it's just such an advantage to have multiple hits on your resume. Those guys really produce. Guys that haven't, tend not to the same degree. They haven't shown that they can play. Stafford, you know, if he gets a 5-year window, I'd put him up against any rookie. So that would sort of be my angle on it. So any of those guys, I think, is fine. My favorites of the range, I think Stafford, Ryan, and Cousins are my three favorite guys. I have questions about what the offense is going to look like with Tannehill. No Arthur Smith. I think very highly of Arthur Smith. So without him, I think that there's a question there in terms of what the offense is going to look like. I think that's something we need to factor in. Goff's the other one. I do think Goff in a couple year window, I think that's pretty attractive. But I wonder if what the upside is going to look like if you've got Breshad Perriman and Tyrell Williams bracketing the field on the outside. You know, even if you throw it 650 times, how much are you sort of getting out of that? It is some of the concern that I have. You've got Hockenson, you've got Swift. You got Quintez Cephas, who's a guy that's interesting. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Maybe they're in the market for, you know, a reclamation project off the waivers or something like that. I think all those things are very possible. But that's kind of the concern that I have with Goff. But again, he's got a top six. He's got multiple top 12s, be 27. You still have, he finished quarterback 16 last year and he was hurt. So you do have still opportunities there, I think, for some. It's probably going to look more like quarterback 2 type production, almost like an Andy Dalton type quarterback 2, quarterback 3 type cost production. I think that's kind of what you're looking at with him. So, again, if that's the third guy that you get of that group, that ain't bad. Again, you got to kind of understand the bet you're making. It's more of a floor than a ceiling bet. It's more of a floor production bet than it is a high-end flip candidate. Whereas you look at a guy in that range, Mac Jones still has that in his range of outcomes where he's a high-end flip guy. I don't think you do have that for Goff. So it's a little bit the question of the bet that you're making. I think if you are going to go and do the late round quarterback, I think, you know, third, fourth, fifth round, you know, if it's Rodgers, you can maybe wait on Rodgers, but you go four, five, six. I think you go 5, 6, 7 conceivably. Again, I don't think you want to miss on Cousins in that case. I think you want to get, I would probably, if it was me, I was going to wait on quarterback, I'd probably go, I'd probably hit, Stafford, like Stafford fourth, something like that. And then Ryan, Ryan or Cousins maybe in the sixth. That's kind of what the math looks like. And then you can sort of backfill from there. Again, do you want Goff to be your quarterback 3? Do you want to go a different route with that? I do think if you lock in Stafford and you lock in Matt Ryan, you got a couple year window to play with. Then you can sort of experiment on the back end of that. You can experiment with Mac Jones in the 8th, for example. You can experiment with Sam Darnold in the 8th. Heck, you can experiment with Jordan Love in the 10th. That's one that I think is pretty interesting. When you look at guys who are going a little bit later, Derek Carr, I think at 907 is interesting. Again, some of the ceiling concerns are there. It's more of a Goff type thing, but I think he's a guy that you could target in that range. I wouldn't probably be in on Carson Wentz at 603. Seems a little rich considering that Matt Ryan's going at 611, and Matt Ryan's been vastly better than him throughout the last however long you want to measure. That would be a scenario. I think you could go with Carr. I would avoid Wentz, but I think you could go with Carr. I think an interesting tactic in this, if you sort of are like, hey, you go Ryan, or you go Stafford, maybe you go Ryan, and you say, all right, like I'm going to wait a little bit further on quarterback. You know, what type of outs do I have? A Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill stack is not crazy. So Taysom Hill going in the 12th, Jameis Winston going in the 9th. That, you know, go and take them 8th and 11th, something like that. I don't think that's unreasonable. You're basically locking it up. And I think you got long-term outs. And especially if it's a situation where Taysom Hill develops as a starter in New Orleans, I do think you got extra outs there because Jameis could go someplace else. I don't think Taysom Hill is going to go someplace else and be the starter, but I think you've got outs if it is Taysom Hill that Jameis Winston could go someplace else and start. So I do think you've got optionality there. Other guys you could potentially go in on later in the draft in terms of if you're looking at a quarterback three, in terms of guys off the board, but that could produce quarterback two type valuation. I do think Brady makes a lot of sense. 706, quarterback 22. I think that makes a lot of sense. This year, maybe next year, are you pairing him with, maybe you got a Zach Wilson or something like that, someone that fell. You sort of compare Stafford, Zach Wilson, and Brady, something like that, just trying to figure out how you put a board together. But I think Brady, quarterback three type prices, quarterback one type production, at least here in the short term, and that can bridge a gap. I think if you want to take Fields or take Lance, I think backfilling them with Brady makes a lot of sense. That doing that type of deal makes a lot of sense. Another one that makes a ton of sense, and maybe a way to not go quarterback three in the top like eight rounds, not go three quarterbacks in the top eight rounds, but maybe you want to go four in the top 12, or maybe even five in the top 12. If you're sort of doing that Winston Hill stack, you can run it back with Ryan Fitzpatrick. So he's in the 13th round. So those are sort of the scenarios I think are pretty interesting. Another guy a little bit deeper, Tyrod Taylor, quarterback 40, 18th round. You sort of look at some of those guys, I think that's interesting. Backfill it with a couple of the veteran guys. Case Keenum's one I really like in terms of backup guys, essentially injury away guys. I'm going to incorporate it probably another tier in terms of, I did a show recently about the backups. I'll probably incorporate another tier in the stacking up like the injury away quarterbacks. Once we get a little bit more information on who they are, I'll figure out a way to incorporate them a little bit more too in the tiers. So that's pretty much what I would look to do. Developmental guys, I think Mariota's interesting in terms of stashing him as a multiple way go. If Carr gets hurt, maybe Mariota gets a second chance in like a Ryan Tannehill type scenario. I don't think that he has like that level of ceiling to him, but it wouldn't be crazy. I do think some of the market stuff on quarterbacks is probably changing to a degree though, where you're not getting as many of these retread types. I heard Trent Dilfer talk recently about basically there's so many guys in college that there's no need to really go the, oh, we'll trade for Jimmy Garoppolo route anymore. And that was a kind of an interesting take on it. I hadn't really thought of it in that sense, that that market might dry up a little bit and that might impact how we interact with the later parts of these positions in terms of looking for retread guys. So that'll be an interesting thing. The other thing too, I think when looking at team building, we're going through this and I'm probably going to write something on this going forward, think about how to do it. But I do think in terms of when you're trying to collect assets and thinking about, hey, maybe future assets, maybe thinking about, trading for future picks, it's kind of like the NBA in terms of if you're patient, there's going to become a superstar that's going to become available, whether that's injuries, whether that's suspension risk, whether it's retirement risk. You just look over the past couple of years. I mean, Rodgers was a quote down part of his career, not that long ago. And look at the MVP rebound that he had. Same thing with Dak Prescott, right? Had the injuries, all that stuff. Obviously a big concern. Could be had at a discount. And now he's a top six startup pick. Watson's going through that now, right? Matt Stafford a couple of years ago, right? It was really down in price. Not that you needed to pay exorbitant costs for him. But you look at that situation as well. Let's sort of go back and look at some other dips in prices. And Peyton Manning went through it a little bit, but some of these other guys have gone through that to varying degrees. I think that's something we really need to be in on. And maybe we think like, hey, there's going to be one a year in terms of really good profile that for some reason, shape or form is going to be depressed in price. And we need to figure out ways to target that. So I do think having future assets really helps you do that. Having flexibility at the quarterback position helps you do that. Having optionality in terms of multiple players to trade at a variety of different costs helps you do all that. I think if you were to just look at you know, some of the production stuff and just look at it from that lens, we kind of know how we kind of have an idea of how to solve the game in terms of what we're looking for, right? We're looking for guys that have multiple hits. We're looking for multi-year windows. We're looking in the teens, typically. All of those things, I think, are kind of what we're looking to do at the quarterback position generally. I think a 400 or 500 level class on it would be, hey, you need to have options in terms of how do I make a deal for Dak Prescott when he's hurt? Well, it's really tough to sort of close the gap between Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins, right? That's a lot of value gap. But if you have a guy like Russell Wilson, right, you can trade and you have Cousins, you get some other guys. It's a lot easier to trade Wilson for Prescott plus than it is to trade Cousins plus for Prescott when he's injured. Those are the things that I, as I'm thinking more and more about this, to try and build in some options in terms of trading, try and build in some optionality. That is something I am a proponent of, having the late round quarterback approach in Superflex. What the drawback on that is that I have found and I've seen is it's tough to extract trade valuation in the market, because you are not going to get, for the same reason that these guys are depressed in value, you're not going to have a ton of trade options. So what do I mean by that? Well, if Kirk Cousins is going quarterback 22 in startup draft that you're in, it almost definitionally means that the rest of the league is low on him, right? The rest of the league doesn't have the level of interest that we do at the cost, because they aren't appreciating the profile like we do, right? That's why we're finding value. Problem with that is, if you're then trying to trade, hey, look, I got this great asset in Kirk Cousins, no one believes that. No one believes that. So that's the thing with sort of, I think layering makes a lot of sense. I think that this really works at running back too, in terms of, hey, if you want to sort of trade within the running back position, it's tough to trade a one injury away guy for structure a package around a one injury away guy for an injured Saquon Barkley. I mean, it's really tough to do that. But if you have a bunch of one injury away guys, you can put together an offer of, someone in the teens range for Barkley, and it's much easier to do that, right? It's much easier to do a deal around, you know, Antonio Gibson for Barkley when Barkley's hurt than it is to go from Mike Davis to Barkley, right? So instead of having Mike Davis be the target guy, you know, you have Antonio Gibson, you sort of use him, as these are just examples. It's much easier to get that deal done because they're just closer in trade value. Same thing at quarterback. It's much easier to go from Russell Wilson to trade Russell Wilson in a Watson trade than it is to trade Jameis Winston in a Watson trade. Right? Those are much more difficult things to do. So I do think layering your team has value beyond just what the analytics would say about near-term production. So that is one thing that I've learned over the past, you know, we'll call it 6 months to a year, that I've seen sort of in practice that we can't necessarily pick up in numbers. And so as a result of that, I do think waiting on quarterback is maybe the most efficient way to do it. I'm not necessarily sure it's the optimal way to do it. I think that there's other things that go on that the flexibility to have some layers at the quarterback position do help. You know, having some attractiveness in the market to other ranges of position helps. I think stacking tight end is a similar way with that, right? How do you trade for a depressed asset, George Kittle? All of these guys, it's all the same story. You need someone sort of in the range to trade to him. It's really tough to trade, you know, Dalton Schultz. Right. So if you have a bunch of guys like that and you're sort of streaming the position, it's really tough to make that deal. Whereas if you've got Goddard and you've got Ingram and then you got Dalton Schultz, you're sort of layering the position, you've got more optionality in terms of trades. I think that's one of the things about going late quarterback that it's probably the most optimal way to do it. But I do think sort of as I watch more and more of Dynasty, as I watch more and more Superflex, as I watch study quarterbacks more, I understand that there's inefficiencies that we can extrapolate, and sort of the asset value of some of these quarterbacks is valuable beyond anything that would show up in like a warp type metric. So having the ability and the flexibility to trade a guy like Wilson, trade a guy like that, I think to some degree has an advantage over, you know, maybe waiting at the position and taking Matt Ryan as your quarterback one or something like that. That team, while maybe not super less optimal in terms of warp, is going to be lesser, less fluid, less liquid in the trade market. So that's one of the things that I'm sort of studying more of. I don't necessarily have a way to quantify that in terms of like a specific metric, but I do think, you know, layering costs is something that if you want to be active in the trade market, I think you need to have some part of it. If you don't care, I think you can wait on quarterback and be plenty flexible. So, and be plenty productive, but maybe not necessarily flexible. So that'll do it for this one. Again, I'm going to have more the veterans. I'm going to do team profile. I'm covering New Orleans for Football Guys, so I'll have some of that stuff coming out too. So you can look for all that. Until next time, continue to embrace the variance. We'll talk again very soon.